How to apply high throughput cell panel screening to advancing drug development. So over the last 30 years, cell panel screening has become an indispensable tool for advancing drug development. And over the last 10 years, Horizon has gained a lot of expertise. We have a cell panel screening platform that we've been running screens for our clients. So today, so when we go out and talk to clients, we get asked a lot of questions in common about cell panel screening, about how we do it and how it can best be applied to drug development. So today I want to answer some of those questions. So I want to talk about...
Sorry for disturbing, we are not sharing your screen. Can you please put a sharing screen there?
Says I'm sharing, let me just... Can you see it now?
Yeah, great.
Great, okay.
Sorry.
No problem. So as I said, our clients, our customers, when we go out to talk to them, they ask a lot of questions in common. So today I wanted to address some of those questions. So today I'm going to address three main topics. First is the what, the why, and the hows of cell panel screening. So what is cell panel screening? How do you do it? Why do you do it? The second thing is cell panel screening is quite a mature technology now, but how do you combine it with the newer kid on the block of CRISPR screening? And the third question I'm going to address today is how do you better capture disease complexity using cell panel screens? And I hope in answering these questions that I may give you some ideas about how you could potentially use cell panel screening for your own research. Okay. So what is cell panel screening? So cell panel screening commonly involves the testing of compounds. So these could be small molecule inhibitors, could be monoclonal antibodies, across large, diverse cancer cell line panels. It can also involve the testing of genetic-based reagents, so for example, sRNAs or CRISPR reagents, and sometimes even more exotic reagents like screening oncolytic viruses. These assays involve miniaturization, so we run our assays in 384 well plates, but the use of 1536 well plates is very common also. Because of the number of plates involved and the scale involved, it's not possible to manually run these assays at low throughput. So you need some level of automation. Readouts for this assay can range from, these assays can range from the very simple, for example, basic add and read assays, such as simple viability assays, where you add a reagent to a plate and then read the output in a plate reader, through to more complex assays, for example, complex phenotypic-based immunofluorescence, high-content image-based assays. So why would you want to do cell panel screening? So at Horizon, our clients do a range of screens, but there are two particularly common types of screen. One type of screen is for patient stratification. So this is when you're trying to identify the best patient population to test your compound in. So in this scenario, you add your drug to your diverse cell line panel. You may be doing this in a simple assay, like a viability survival type assay. You know, does the drug kill the cells? You then look at the response to the cell line and you classify the cells as either responders or non-responders. You can then use that as a launch point to do bioinformatics analysis to try and understand what the molecular markers of these kind of responses are, which cancer types respond best to the drug. So you need some genomic information about your cell lines. For example, you could use publicly available genomic data from databases generated by organizations like the Cancer Cell Line Encyclopedia and Cancer Dependency Map portal databases. And then this information is obviously useful for helping you answer the question, a key question, which is what patient population might best respond to my drug. And then you can use that information to, for example, design very targeted clinical trials. The second type of most common type of screens done by our customers are large drug combination type screens. So in this scenario, the aim is to test the ability of a large library of drugs to enhance the activity of a customer's candidate drug molecule across a panel of cell lines. So in this scenario, we test the drugs as two drug combinations using a dose matrix, which covers a broad range of concentrations. You then take the results of that analysis and pass them through one of several commonly known mathematical models to analyze combinations to determine whether the two drugs are synergistic. And then this enables you to identify which are the best cocktails, which combinations are the best, and in which types of cancer. And oftentimes, these kind of screens can rescue a client's compound that, you know, may be struggling in clinical trials, maybe it's showing low activity. If you can identify and enhance a compound that enhances the activity of a client's drug, then you can bring some life back into that drug discovery program. So in addition to patient stratification and combination screens, cell panel screens can also be used for target ID and validation purposes. And I'll give an example of this later in the presentation. And they can also be used for drug repurposing screens. So this is when you're looking for new applications for already approved older drugs. And so you can see cell panel screening really has an important broad role across throughout the whole drug discovery process, all the way from early stages, target ID and validation, through to the clinical phases and approval. So as I said, you're dealing with quite large scale experiments here. You're dealing with a lot of plates. So for example, in every year in Horizon, we process up to 20,000 assay plates. So a key question is how do you industrialize the cell panel screening process? So the first key tool you need is a broad, diverse cancer cell line collection that has a broad representation of different mutations, different cancer types, because for the bioinformatics for patient stratification, it's a numbers game. So, you know, you need to have enough cell lines so that you have the statistical power to identify significant associations between drug response and cancer type or underlying molecular biomarkers. So at Horizon, we have over 630 standard cancer cell lines that cover 25 different cancer indications, and you can see some examples in the figure on the right-hand side. And importantly, as I said, you need to have genomic information in these cell lines for the bioinformatics. So you can obviously either generate that yourself, or in this case, we have 90% alignment of our cell lines with the data in the CSLE DepMap databases. So we have all the data for the genome, mutation status, copy number status, gene expression, and so on. We're also very lucky at Horizon. Horizon was founded on gene editing technology, and we have a very large off-the-shelf collection of gene-edited cell lines. So we can supplement cell panel screens in these 630 cell lines with gene-engineered cell lines that may be gene-engineered to contain particular mutations. So that can enable you to test a pre-existing hypothesis you might have about the sensitivity of your compound, for example, if it's associated with a particular mutation. Also, if you think your compound responses may be driven by a mutation that is not so frequent in the cancer population, is not so frequently represented in the standard cell line panel, then again, you might want to supplement with engineered cell lines that carry mutations in that gene. As I said, this is a large scale operation, cell panel screening. So you do need some kind of level of robotics and automation. This is an example of our dosing module, which I hope the video will work. Yeah, well, it's working on my screen. So this is one of our dosing modules. So here we have a robotic arm, an automated incubator, some hotels carrying compound source plates, and two instruments called echoacoustic dispensers, which dispense the compounds. So the robotic arm is taking out the assay plate from the automated incubator, placing it in the echoacoustic dispenser. You'll see that actually the plate is turned upside down. And then the arm places the source plate again into the acoustic dispenser, and the drugs are fired from the source plate up into the assay plate by sound waves. Obviously, these kind of screens generate a large amount of data, so you do need some kind of specialist informatics. There are lots of off-the-shelf solutions, but also you can make your own customized version, which is what we have done at Horizon. So we have two important pieces of software. One is a piece of software called Chalice Analyzer, and this is designed for the dynamic analysis of large-scale cell panel screens. So you can interrogate your data very dynamically. It displays a range of metrics. It displays all the dose response curves, for example, here. And for combination experiments, it displays the results of those as heat maps. There are also a range of other visualizations that you can use in the program to get a top level view of the results of the screen. And this is something that we provide to our customers when they do a screen with us. We provide them that software so that they can use the same software that we use for looking at the data. The other key piece of the puzzle in terms of informatics is a program that we developed to do the bioinformatics. So to look for the associations between response and cancer cell type and genomic status. So here is just a screenshot from that program. You can do quite a lot of different things. You can do hierarchical clustering analysis. So you can look for relationships between cell lines and different compounds, how they cluster. You can do waterfall plots and things like this. And this enables you to explore your data in several different ways and try and decide how you're going to classify the cell lines as responders or non-responders. And then you take those lists and look for statistical associations with the genomic data. Another key component of screening is having a dedicated screening team. When you're doing large-scale screening, you really need people who are just absolutely focused on the screening to make sure you maintain the quality of the cell lines, the quality of the data, and things like that. So we have a specialist cell culture team. So at any one time, we can be growing up to 250 cell lines in culture at one time. And on a given day, we could be seeding up to 30 cell lines for screening. So we have a dedicated cell culture team. Each person is responsible for maintaining about 40, 50 cell lines, and also for preparing the assay. So seeding the cells into the assay plates. We have a dedicated automation team who look after all the equipment. They have to do endless QCs in the equipment to make sure they're dispensing the right volumes and things like that. And we also have a dedicated compound management team. So this compound management team is responsible for handling compounds that come from clients, preparing the source plates, and they also maintain our own in-house oncocentric library. So this is a library of reference standard of care compounds and compounds in clinical trials. And this is an important library for our customers because quite often when they come to do a combination, they will combine their lead compound with our oncocentric library to look for beneficial combinations. So when you run a large cell panel screen, you're usually running cell lines as batches over a period of weeks or months because they're too large to run all in one day. So it's absolutely key that your assays are well validated and that you monitor assay performance and ensure that the assays are robust, because you need to make sure that the different assay runs on different days, that the data is absolutely comparable. So how do you go about validating a cell panel screening assay and monitoring assay performance to ensure robustness? So to illustrate this, I'm going to give an example of one of our most popular screens, which is a screen called an OncoSignature screen, or platform is sometimes referred to it as. And this is a screen which is designed to rapidly profile the activity of a client's compound, either as a single agent or as a combination in a panel of 300 cells in just 3 to 4 months, which is relatively quickly for this type, relatively quick for this type of screen. We use a simple viability, add and read viability assay called Cell Tie to Glow, which is a product sold by Promega. It's a luminescent-based readout that you read in a plate reader. And the goal of this assay is to identify relationships in response between the compound and particular cancer types or particular genotypes. So it's a patient, a lot of clients running it who put their compounds into it are sort of looking for information to help with patient selection, patient stratification. So when you come to validating a high throughput sort of cell-based assay, there's lots of aspects that you need to look at. And I'm just going to illustrate one of them here, which is sort of the biological assay of assay validation. So checking that the assay actually gives, accurately, biologically, gives you the readout and the results that you're looking for. So one way to biologically validate an assay is to run a benchmark or benchmark compounds through the assays across the cell line panel, benchmark compounds that have a well established gene drug relationship. So BRAF inhibitors are one of the sort of poster child of personalized medicine. Patients who have skin malignant melanomas with activating BRAF mutations often show dramatic responses to BRAF inhibitors. And you can see a patient here who's received, I think, 15 weeks of BRAF inhibitor treatment. So amongst other compounds, we use BRAF inhibitors as a benchmark compound to help us validate that OncoSignature is working well. And I'm going to show you some data for a compound, a BRAF inhibitor called dabrafenib. So this is a clinical compound that's used in the treatment of malignant melanoma in the clinic. So here are some results. So here I plotted the response of each cell line grouped by different cancer types. So you can see the cancer types on the bottom. The response or sensitivity is on the y-axis and is measured using what we call response area. So this is area under the dose response curve. So a greater area under the dose response curve indicates that the compound is more active. And it's a nice metric for capturing both potency and the maximum effect of a compound in one metric. And you can see it's very striking that skin tumors were the most responsive in the cell line panel. We then went on to do the bioinformatics analysis of response to see if we could link response to mutation status or gene expression and so on. And the statistically significant top hit from the screen by quite some way was BRAF mutation. And you can see here in this graph, box whisker plot of response in mutant and BRAF mutant tumors versus wild type. And you can see that in general, the responses in the mutant tumors are much greater versus wild type. So this kind of approach, we tried this with other compounds as well, really nicely validated the ability of the OncoSignature cell panel screen to help do patient stratification type experiments. And this is also a really nice example of how cell panel screening can contribute important information to help with patient stratification. The other, once you biologically validated your assay and done all the other kind of assay validation experiments, you then need to ensure that the assay is robust, and you also need to monitor performance of the assay during the screens. So there are two phases that are important here. One is having healthy cells is absolutely critical. If you don't have healthy, well-maintained cells, the assays tend to not perform very well or very consistently. So this all starts with a very well-maintained, well-curated cell line banks, and absolutely critically, and I cannot underline this enough, they must be SGL authenticated to ensure that they're the right cell line. So SGL authentication or authentication issues in general are widely recognized as a problem across, any experiments really involving cell lines, but particularly when you do cell panel screens and you're dealing with lots of cell lines in one go. So it's really key to make sure the banks are validated by genetic means. So every time you make a fresh bank, we validate, SGL validate the cell lines, and we actually also SGL authenticate randomly 10% of the cell lines that we have growing up in the lab at any one time every month to make sure that there's no mix-ups. Another important factor for ensuring consistency in healthy cells is trying to screen the cells as soon as possible after they've been thawed from frozen. So this is to, you obviously need to allow them enough time to recover from frozen, but you need to make sure that you don't see phenotypic or genetic drift. So if you grow them for months on end and then screen them, they may well perform differently to how they performed at the time of banking. And of course, like any experiment, assay controls are absolutely critical. So we look at two control parameters when we do our screens. So each time we screen a cell line, every time we look at its growth rate by doubling time, and we measure the effect. Well, we test the cell line with 10 control compounds. So this is in every time we run the cell line to confirm that the cell line is performing as expected in that assay. And if it doesn't meet a certain consistency with reference data that we've collected over the years, then we rerun the assay. Having the data from these assay controls also helps you, control and study assay reproducibility with time and determine sort of how robust your assay is. So here's an example of that where we looked at reproducibility in one cell line with one drug, camptothecin. It's a topoisomerase inhibitor. And this data shows the response of that cell line to that drug over 12 separate assay runs over a period of several years, and you can see that the assay data is really consistent. So the OncoSignature screens are very robust. And you can also look at that with a more kind of retrospective analysis. So here we've taken three of those control compounds, and we've correlated the responses that we got back in the day. We've been running this assay for quite a while, between 2015 and 2019 across 100 cell lines. And again, you can see the correlation is really nice. So this screening assay is incredibly robust. And this is really important because customers quite often come back for repeat screens and they want to compare the data of the new compounds with the previous compounds. So, this is absolutely, absolutely critical. So now I want to move to talking about combining cell panel screens with CRISPR screens. So Horizon has a CRISPR screening platform that we offer to customers. It's a very important platform for us, like the cell panel screening platform. So this enables a functional genomic interrogation of, to help identify drug targets and patient stratification. And obviously CRISPR screening is an incredibly powerful technology because it enables you to look at the effect of suppressing or activating thousands of compounds on the sensitivity to a drug in a single experiment. So this CRISPR screens and cell panel screens are obviously very complementary in terms of what you're trying to do with them. And customers quite often ask us, how can we combine these two technologies in an effective way to advance our drug development? So we set out to sort of exemplify a screening strategy in which you can do that. So this screening strategy is a very simple screening strategy. It's a two-step strategy. So in step one, you perform a pooled CRISPR drug gene interaction screen to look for a genes and pathway that when modulated, knocked down, for example, affect the sensitivity to your compound of interest. So the hits you get from this kind of screen are then basically a candidate list that could potentially be used in drug combinations with the primary drug. Phase two is then to perform a rapid initial validation, pharmacological validation using cell panel screening, mostly importantly combination screening, but also with monotherapy screening. And then this should give you a whole load of new leads of new clinically relevant combinations that can then be further evaluated. So to exemplify the strategy, we chose poly-ADP ribose polymerase inhibitors, PARP inhibitors. So these are involved in DNA damage, inhibiting DNA damage pathways. And these are clinically approved for the treatment of various cancers, such as breast and ovarian cancers that carry existing mutations in DNA repair pathways. For example, BRCA mutated cancers. And in this study, we looked at two compounds, one compound called olaparib, which is very well known, and a second compound called talazoparib. So in step one, we performed a gene drug-gene interaction screen using olaparib, using a pooled whole genome CRISPR knockout library in HD29 colorectal cancer cells. And we chose this cell because this is a very robust cell and that we've used for a lot of CRISPR development screens at Horizon. So I'm not going to go into the details of how to do the CRISPR screens and things like that. And in fact, one of my colleagues, Paul Russell, is going to give a talk at a CATS seminar in December, I think, on CRISPR screening. So he'll fill you in on how they work then. But I just wanted to focus on or give examples of some of the hits, sensitizing hits that came out of the screen. So these are genes that, when knocked down, drive sensitivity to olaparib. So genes or pathways where genes came out as hits included DNA damage repair, for example, ATM and Fanconi anemia complex genes, and ribonucleotide excision repair. So for example, RNase H2. And these are obviously biological pathways that sort of make sense based on mechanism of action of PARP inhibitors. So operating through DNA damage mechanisms. Other interesting hits that came out of the screen were genes for apoptosis, for example, BCL-XL, and genes for chromatin modulators, such as the BET bromodomain genes. And importantly, loss of PARP1 came out as a resistance hit. So knocking out PARP1 resulted in loss of sensitivity to olaparib, which is consistent with the fact that PARP1 is the main target of olaparib. So to start off, to validate some of the hits that came out of the CRISPR screen using cell panel screening, we started off by doing a single agent screen, an oncosignature screen across over 300 cell lines, looking at olaparib and talazoparib as single agents. So as before, I've displayed the data here as sensitivity of each of the cell lines grouped by different cancer types. Sensitivity again is area under the dose response curve on the y-axis. And you can see here that the pattern of, and it's ranked according to the most sensitive tissues for olaparib, but you can see that the overall trends, the pattern of sensitivity between the two compounds is very similar, which is consistent with them having the same mechanism, hitting the same target. And there are a number of sensitive cell lines which came from cancer types which are known to be responsive in the clinic. So for example, two of the breast cancer cell lines are very sensitive, and some of the ovarian cancer cell lines were some of the more sensitive cell lines. So we use this data to do a bioinformatics screen. And one of the significant sort of highlight results that came out of that bioinformatics analysis was that, similar to the CRISPR screen where we saw that knockout part one drove resistance to olaparib, we also found that there was a correlation between PARP inhibitor sensitivity and part one expression. And here we've done correlation plots of for each cell line of PARP inhibitor sensitivity for talazoparib and olaparib versus the baseline PARP1 expression. So this is the PARP1 expression before drug expression, and this is data that comes from the CSLE genomic profiles of these cell lines. And you can see that there's a statistically significant correlation between sensitivity and PARP1 expression, with cell lines with a lower PARP1 expression generally being less sensitive to PARP inhibition. So this mirrors very nicely that hit in the CRISPR screen of loss of PARP1 driving a reduction in sensitivity to olaparib. We then went on to validate some of the CRISPR sensitizing hits using drug combinations. So here we identified clinical grade or inhibitors that are being used in the clinic or in advanced stages of development. So good quality inhibitors against a range of targets that came out of the CRISPR screen or were in related or in pathways or in the same pathways as hits that came out of the CRISPR screen. So for example, these pathways were DNA damage response. And we also looked at the BET genes from chromatin modulators and an apoptosis gene, BCL-xL. We then took these inhibitors and inhibitor names are here, but that's not so important, and combined them with both olaparib and with talazoparib. Across the panel of 10 cell lines, and these cell lines were chosen based on relevance to PARP inhibitor therapy, and also there was colorectal cancers because we did the original screen in HC29 colorectal cancer cells. So we tested these combinations using a combination matrix, a 6x6 dose combination matrix. We analyzed the results of those in Chalice to generate synergy scores. So a single score that represents the overall synergy present in each matrix. And that combination data is represented here in a heat map. And you can see that for all the combinations, there is a very widespread and robust synergistic activity. So this data validates a lot of those hits from the CRISPR screen. And also basically gives you a list of lead combinations that could be evaluated further. And indeed, many of the DNA damage response combinations between PARP inhibitor and genes like ATR and CHK1 are currently being evaluated in the clinic. So this is a really nice screen for or a nice sort of using both technologies together, the CRISPR technology to rapidly and agnostically identify hits of genes that might, when inhibited, might combine very nicely with a drug. And then you can validate those hypotheses, providing there is inhibitors available to see whether pharmacological combination inhibition of, in this case, PARP plus genes that came out of hits in the CRISPR screen, you can quickly validate whether pharmacological inhibition is giving a synergistic effect. So this really shows you what a powerful approach it can be combining these two technologies together. If you're interested in more on that story, particularly there's a lot more details on how we did the CRISPR. We did the CRISPR screen and the type of CRISPR library we used. This has just been published in the CRISPR journal. So it's a paper by Blank et al. And it's open access. So it's freely available if you're interested. So in the last part of my talk, I want to talk about how you can better capture disease complexity when doing cell panel screens. So most commonly, and the assays I've talked about so far have involved flat two-dimensional monolayer assays. And these assays have resulted in the identification of many successful drugs, and they can be predictive of clinical responses. But clearly they don't predict or they're not good models of the 3D microtumor environment. For example, here we're comparing a 2D monolayer culture and a 3D culture. And you can see that the 2D monolayer culture is sort of lacking these sort of 3D cell-to-cell interactions. It's lacking these gradients of nutrients, oxygen, waste products. 2D assays are also subject to sort of mechanical stresses through being attached to the plastic 2D surface, which are quite sort of unnatural and artifactual. And 2D assays also lack this zonation that you can see in tumors and in 3D assays, where you can see different layers of the 3D structure. So proliferating cells on the surface, then a layer of quiescent cells, and then dead necrotic cells in the center of this 3D culture. So 3D cultures are clearly much more suitable for mimicking and recapitulating the tumor microenvironments. So the question is, what is the best kind of 3D format to run cell panel screens in? So there are plenty of 3D assays out there, there's hundreds of different 3D models. The challenge is that many of them are very complex. Sometimes they involve multiple cell types. Quite often they involve adding extracellular matrices into the cultures, and this is quite challenging to handle with liquid handling automation. And often they involve very complex readouts, like very complex image-based readouts, so they can be quite challenging to run. However, there is one 3D assay culture system, which is 3D tumor spheroids, which is much simpler to use than many of the others. So 3D spheroids are produced simply by seeding single cell suspensions of tumor cells into U-bottom low anchorage plates, and that promotes them to self-aggregate and form these spheroid-like structures. These models are very amenable to simple Adam Reed sort of viability cell health type assays. So for example, there's a cell type glow 3D reagent, which is sort of the 3D counterpart of the cell type glow reagent I talked about earlier in our which we use for our OncoSignature screening platform. So tumor spheroid models are very amenable to high throughput screening in 384, even 1536 well plates. They're very amenable to handling with automation. So what we wanted to do is, as I mentioned earlier, we have a 2D OncoSignature screening platform, which consists of 300 cell lines. So what we wanted to do is kind of make a mirror offering for screening in 3D. So what we did was we took all 300 cell lines from the OncoSignature platform and screened them for ability to form spheroids in U-bottom low anchorage plates. And we were able to identify 200 cell lines that formed spheroids. Here's some examples of the three main sort of spheroid morphologies that we identified. So you have your regular spheroid morphology, very nice and round and smooth. Then you have sort of versions which are slightly more irregular, and then some with sort of more of a loose morphology, where you kind of have a main spheroid with kind of looser, a sort of a satellite 3D colonies around the main spheroid. So these 200 cell lines form the basis of have become now our 3D OncoSignature cell line panel. So here's some example data. Where we did a drug screen in DLD1 colorectal cells, and we were looking at their response to a small library of 35 drugs, and we were looking at the effects in the 3D spheroid assay versus the standard 2D assay. So for the 3D assay, in both cases, we used the cell type glow reagents, the 3D reagent for the 3D assay, and the 2D reagent for the 2D assay. So that gave us quite a nice sort of, although they're different formats, it gave you some commonality in the readouts we were using. Here we've plotted the responses ranked, so we plotted fold change of sensitivity in 3D versus 2D. It's a log 2 scale, and we've ranked them in order of, you know, increased to reduced sensitivity in 3D. And the striking thing that we found from this screen was that MEK and EGFR inhibitors were much more active in 3D. And this is very consistent now with quite a lot of data, emerging data that's coming out of the literature, which is that the MAP kinase pathway, which MEK kinases and EGFR receptor tyrosine kinases are involved in, MAP kinases and even other pathways are actually wired quite differently in tumors in vivo and in and this is also replicated in 3D assays versus the 2D situation. So this is a really important result, and it really highlights the need to carefully consider about what format you screen some compounds in, because in some cases the 2D assay may not be good enough because you don't see some of the responses that you might see in a more in a 3D assay that may recapitulate the kind of signaling that you're seeing in a 3D scenario and much better than a 2D assay. And so we now have quite a few customers who are screening particular classes of compounds that are known to be more active in 3D in OncoSignature 3D. So spheroids are an excellent model for primary 3D assay screens, but they do lack the sort of cellular heterogeneity of some tumors. So one way of addressing that is to screen in sort of patient-derived organoid systems. So here we've looked to test whether our platform is amenable to screening organoids, and we've used two colorectal organoids, one carrying a BRAF mutation and one carrying a KRAS mutation. And you can see that when we grew them, they sort of recapitulated the well-known structure of colorectal organoids. So in the case of isolation A, the BRAF mutant, you can see a lumen. And in the other mutant, you can see villi, crypts and villi. So these are the kind of the classical structures described for colorectal organoids. So we did a small drug screen in those organoids, and these are just an example of two of the compounds. So the dose responses in the purple are from isolation B, so that's the KRAS mutant organoid, and the dose responses in the blue are from the BRAF mutant. We have drug concentration on the x-axis and growth suppression measured as percentage of control on the y-axis. So in the case of the MEK inhibitor, trametinib, you can see that both organoids responded similarly to that compound. But very interestingly, for the BRAF inhibitor, only the organoid with a BRAF mutation responded. So this very nicely exemplifies the use of organoids in 3D screens. So just to finish by summarizing some of the main points that hopefully I've managed to get across during the talk. The first is that cell panel screening is a key tool for drug development. And two of the main applications are patient stratification and drug combination discovery. However, you do require some level of infrastructure if you're going to run them. They're quite involved. And it's absolutely critical that the assays are well validated and robust to enable comparison of data between different screening runs. You can integrate cell panel and CRISPR screening technology very nicely to accelerate drug combination development. And finally, where required, spheroid and organoid assays can better capture disease complexity. So I say where required because, like I said earlier, sometimes the 2D assays do a great job and are predictive of what you see in the clinic. But in other cases, if you do need to look at a more complex disease system, then spheroid and organoid assays are a nice way to go. I just wanted to finish with a quick plug for Horizon. If you are interested in doing any screening to support your work, cell panel screening, please do come and speak to us. So as I said, we have 10 years of experience of running 2D and 3D, 2D cell panel screening assays, and more recently 3D screening assays. And if you are interested, please take a look at our website, horizondiscovery.com, or drop me an email. So thank you so much for listening.